Hey, I'm Josh Barrow, your new host of Left, Right, and Center. Every week, join Rich Lowry, Bob Scheer, and me for a contentious yet civilized debate of the week's big political stories, from ISIS to the U.S. economy to this 47-candidate presidential election we're having. You can find Left, Right, and Center on KCRW's iTunes page.
From KCRW and KCRW.com, I'm Kim Masters, and this is The Business.
Some of the critics would say, oh, come on, this couple isn't stupid. Why would they put up with it? And I'm thinking, we put up with it for years.
We all put up with it.
That's what you do. If you want to do it, you have to play this stupid game.
Jeffrey Klarik and David Crane co-created the sharp Showtime satire Episodes, starring Matt LeBlanc as a fairly heinous version of himself. Episodes follows a British couple who face the worst of Hollywood when they're asked to make an American version of their acclaimed show. The creative duo behind it based it on their experiences on Friends and Mad About You, and they're not shy about listing ways that Showtime could show them a little more love. But first on the news banter, media stocks take a shellacking, and we finally get a glimpse of TLC's costs in canceling 19 Kids and Counting. Stay tuned, it's The Business from KCRW. I am joined by my banter buddy, Michael Schneider, at TV Guide magazine. Hello, Michael.
Hello, Kim.
You are at the Television Critics Association gathering in the lovely Beverly Hills Hilton. And meanwhile, while you were sitting there this past week, endlessly looking at one presentation after another from the networks and the streaming services, now it's expanding to the point of being really almost beyond human endurance, the media stocks were getting pounded on Wednesday, the 5th of August. These stocks got pummeled, $37 billion in market capitalization wiped out, according to an analyst, Todd Younger, and jitters on Wall Street, maybe a huge overreaction to what we've talked about often, this gradual shift away from the traditional business model in television.
Yeah, you know, sitting here at the press tour and watching the networks unleash their new wares, it did feel a little bit like Rome was burning while all of this was going on. But I think you're right in that, you know, you and I and everyone in the business have been talking about these changes for years. It's not new that Netflix has altered the way people consume television. And the fact is there's a new generation of young folks who may never purchase cable TV. They're called the cord nevers in the business. And as a result, everyone's sort of recalibrating what the future is going to look like in terms of subscriptions and fees and everything else. And so for whatever reason, it all came down to one day where suddenly it impacted the stocks to this degree.
Yeah, they bounced around a bit afterwards, except Viacom continued to take a beating. And of course, we've talked about Viacom and how they have been ratings challenged. You know, Philippe Doman, who runs Viacom, tried to be bullish in an earnings call, but it just, I think it sounded a little bit strained.
Yeah. And, you know, again, you and I have talked about this for a while. It's a number of Viacom channels. Of course, you know, MTV, VH1 have been challenged. Comedy Central has some great talent, but obviously they just said goodbye to their biggest star, Jon Stewart. So that's, you know, that's a little jittery as well.
So meanwhile, Mike, as you're sitting there watching the networks present a lot of reboots again, something else we've talked about, you know, there's quite a lot of dredging things up from the past. And ironically, in one case, I think Fox is bringing back a show because it turned out to be a thing on Netflix.
Well, I think that's the case with a lot of this IP coming back. You know, Fox, of course, they're already bringing back The X-Files. They already brought back 24. Now they're bringing back Prison Break. And the big reason why they are is because they were told by folks inside Netflix that it was one of their biggest performing library titles. So I think Fox and 20th Century Fox, now under one umbrella, sees opportunity both domestically, but more importantly, internationally.
Yeah, I mean, turning to the movie side, Tom Rothman, who's now running the Sony Film Studio, has announced a slate, no fewer than 16 films going out for until, I think, 2019. He is about to open the first movie that he made when he started working for that company, not as the head of the studio, but running this TriStar branch. This was after he was let go at Fox. Ricky and the Flash, which looks like Ezra Taping is opening. It's not predicted to do particularly well. I think that he would just as soon not have people talk about that movie and instead talk about this cluster of movies, many of which very familiar titles.
Yeah, looking at this list, Kim, there's a remake, of course, of Jumanji. There's the female version of Ghostbusters that we've all been talking about and tracking for a while. And then not only a third version of Bad Boys, but a fourth as well.
Yes, a fourth version of Bad Boys, if you can hold on until July 3rd, 2019. So
I'll set my calendar now.
We'll see how that works out. And finally, popping back over to television for a second, we've talked about the loss of 19 Kids and Counting and what impact that would have. You know, TLC, the Learning Channel, as it once was called, finally canceled the show. It took forever. And now they've had to just cough up what it is going to cost them.
Yeah, I think ironically, they should call it now $19 million loss and counting, considering that's the number that Discovery is reporting taken down as a loss because that show had to be yanked. It's part of a $24 million programming charge that Discovery's taken in its most recent report.
Yeah, so they are in a period of reinvention. And of course, you know, they're also talking like CBS has done, HBO has done, of maybe starting a streaming channel because, you know, it's, as you're seeing there at the TCAs, Mike, change is very much in the air.
It is indeed. We saw Netflix came and they gave us an entire day worth of programming. And they're talking now of premiering 475 original hours of programming over the next year. And that's from zero just 3 years ago. So it's astounding the amount of programming that Netflix is producing, Amazon as well, Hulu, even smaller folks like Crackle, owned by Sony, came to the press tour and unleashed some new wares. So there's a lot of programming coming in the next year or so, Kim.
Absolutely. Drowning in TV. And of course, Netflix, the numbers of subscribers are just gargantuan. And guess what? Their stock is not suffering. Thank you, Mike.
Thanks, Kim.
That's Michael Schneider of TV Guide magazine. In the 1990s, David Crane and Jeffrey Klarik hit the TV jackpot. Crane co-created Friends and Klarik produced Mad About You. The two are partners in life and in writing, and they mine their years of experience to create the Showtime comedy Episodes. It's a satire of Hollywood with Matt LeBlanc playing a version of himself, still trying to live down the legacy of Joey from
nice
Friends.
Hey, how you doing?
In Episodes, a co-production with the BBC, married British writing team Sean and Beverly, played by Stephen Mangan and Tamsin Gregg, are asked to make an American version of their acclaimed TV comedy. Soon after landing in L.A., they find that everything they love about their show is being transformed beyond recognition thanks to changes wrought by disingenuous network executives. One of the first things Sean and Beverly learn is that when the head of the network, played by John Pankow, tells them something, he usually means the opposite. His underling, Carol, played by Kathleen Rose Perkins, has to explain what's really going on.
You know what my fantasy is? My fantasy is I wake up tomorrow and I've got your show on my network. Seriously, I want to have sex with your show.
Yeah, Merck may not have actually seen your show.
Has he seen it?
No.
The network forces Sean and Beverly to accept Matt LeBlanc as the star of their show, though even he knows he's wrong for the part. This version of LeBlanc is a little desperate, willing to consider almost any offer from his agent, played by Roger Bart.
What kind of party?
It's a birthday party for the head of state of a country in Central Asia. He's turning 50, and he's offering to pay $500,000 for you to be there.
$500,000 to show up at a party?
Yep.
Why would you not bring me this?
His regime is somewhat iffy, torture-wise.
Huh. And he wants me at his birthday party?
Apparently, he's a huge Friends fan. Joey's his favorite.
Uh-huh.
Now keep in mind, he's widely considered to be among the worst dictators on the planet.
Okay.
He's a war criminal. On the plus side, he would send his private plane for you.
Episodes finished its fourth season this year, and a fifth is on the way. It's had Emmy nominations, but so far it's only found success with a niche audience. When ballots went out for nominations this year, Crane and Klarik decided to take their awards campaign into their own hands, running a full-page ad in The Hollywood Reporter, where I work, to promote their show.
I don't think anybody feels as though their show is out there enough, but
right.
Certainly...
Especially
Showtime,
us.
Yeah, and Showtime themselves have admitted they wish they had more money to throw at Emmy campaigning, and we were just feeling lost in the sea of all the For Your Consideration ads and billboards and everything we were getting in the mail and felt like we had to take it into our own hands and not just be passive.
I mean, you have nominations. You have Matt LeBlanc. He's been nominated more than once, though, right?
This is his fourth time.
Yeah. Right. And you guys are nominated for writing.
Yeah, fourth time, too.
Do you think that your ad is the thing that made the difference?
Yes. We really thought this time we were going to just slip under the radar and nobody would ever even think to vote for us. And we heard about Matt, and we were very excited. And then he called us and said, hey, congratulations. And we thought, well, he meant because we wrote this part for him. And,
right.
And he was recognized. And we said, great, we're happy for you. And he said, no, I mean for you. And we said, what do you mean? And David's quickly Googling us.
I'm online going, what happened?
And he goes, oh, my God. We could not believe it.
That's amazing. I mean, it is a show that it doesn't feel to me like it gets the press. I mean, there are a lot of amazing comedies on cable generally. Not just yours on Showtime, but a show like Getting on HBO. It feels like they do great work, and somehow they don't get that limelight. And do you have any idea what that's about?
I think there's just so much stuff now.
And there are so many really good shows. There's so many networks, so many streaming avenues now. And just to have people notice you is really difficult.
That's David talking now, right?
Yeah,
it is.
So, David, I know you guys write this whole thing before you start shooting. It's all written.
Jeffrey and I write every episode ourselves, and we do it all in advance. So it's all done, and we can look at the whole season and take a step back before we shoot any of it.
Do you feel like you have a temptation to sort of like, I know, let's kill somebody or something stunty just like to kind of break through the clutter? Or do you just feel like it is what it is and you're going to live with that?
Well, I think that's why we did the ad. I don't think we can, at this stage in the game, ever break through the clutter. I mean, Matt gets more publicity for a show he did 10 years ago than he does for this. I mean, he'll go off and do press, and inevitably, what's your favorite episode of Friends? Who's your favorite friend? Do you guys still see each other? Are you going to do, you know, I mean, it's always about the other show.
I mean, that is the blessing and the curse of Friends, or a show, a hit like that. It's so defining. I've often thought about it. Certain people, like Ted Danson, you know, moved beyond constantly being the guy on Cheers. But for the Friends, I think it's been much more difficult.
Although Lisa got tons and tons of press for the comeback.
Yeah.
I don't think they ever completely move past it. Even Jennifer, who's made a million movies since the show ended, still they refer back to her life on Friends. Right. But I think they've all been able to do really good work, which kind of is really all you can ask for.
So when you conceived of the show, neither one of you is British. You're writing for these two British characters who are certainly very integral to the show. How do you get that right? Do you consult with the two performers, or do you feel like you can channel British?
Yeah, we channel a lot of different things. It's true. I don't feel like I write. I feel like I channel. It just comes out like that.
I mean, do they ever say to you, no, a British person wouldn't say that?
Very seldom. First season, there was a line where Tamsin says, are you saying I pussy whip him? And she did it about a dozen times. And then during a break, she said, now, what exactly is pussy whip? And I said, well, seriously? And we were like shocked. We explained what pussy whip is and is there a British phrase for it? And she said, no. So we said, well, then... Yeah. Just say pussy whip and act like you know what you're talking about.
Yeah, we've already shot this, so let's keep going.
Yeah.
I mean, every once in a while we'll hit a word or two where they'd say, we wouldn't say this, but it's pretty infrequent.
I mean, did either one of you or both of you spend a lot of time in London?
No.
The way it all came about was we were thinking we had just done a network show here, and it wasn't the most ideal experience. And so Jeffrey said, why don't we do a show for the BBC? Because we've heard they're really great.
And that way, not only will we be doing only six episodes, but they're over in England. So how often are we going to have to see them?
And that's when he came up with the idea of shooting it.
Yeah.
Coming up with a show. He came up with a show that takes place in L.A., but it's for England. So it was like, this is perfect. We'll shoot it at home.
Yeah. And we'll never have to see the network ever. So we go over there. We pitch it to the BBC. They buy it in the room. Everybody's all excited. And then they tell us how much money we have to make the show. And it wouldn't pay for, like, an episode here. You couldn't imagine. I mean, Matt LeBlanc's wardrobe was bigger than what they were offering. And so we thought, oh, Jesus. So we're going to have to shoot it here and pretend it's home? This is not what we had in mind, and that's exactly what happened.
The irony is we're doing a show about Los Angeles, and we're shooting it in London because it's less expensive, about British people who leave London to come to Los Angeles.
So some of the exteriors are shot here.
Not a lot. The only thing that we shoot here, we come here maybe a week out of our three-month schedule, and we shoot a lot of the hiking in the hills. And once in a while, we went to the beach once. But most of the first season was all green screen. And then they cut the budget further. So we started coming up with unique ways of trying to make it look expensive. But outside the office windows, for example, at night, we hang Christmas lights.
It's
I'm not
true.
Kidding.
No,
I mean, it's really, it's like we go to the department stores and shop for wardrobe. We bring things in from our apartment for the stage, for the sets. I mean, we have no money.
Yeah. But yeah, very often we just throw a lot of light in coming in through the window and call it Los Angeles.
We had a scene where Sean has lunch with his old partner, Tim, and we found a restaurant on an alleyway, and I thought, if we put a couple of numbers on the opposite wall of the alley and have a cart go by and maybe a part of a palm tree and just blow out the light, maybe it will look like it's a commissary. And we did it, and people said, no, but that was Paramount, wasn't it? No.
I thought it was either Paramount or Fox, yeah.
No. That was some crappy restaurant.
Downtown London.
And we used it for three other restaurants. We shot three different restaurants in that same
day. Just changing the dressing on it.
Yeah,
huh?
Yeah. And you just have to be careful that you don't see one of the double-decker buses go by.
So you have no money because BBC isn't giving you any money. And how does Showtime become involved?
We needed a little bit more money.
We went
around.
Went to Showtime and they said yes. And
they were the first people we went to.
Yeah.
And it was Bob Greenblatt.
Ah, the irony.
Yeah, he neglected to mention he was leaving 2 weeks later.
Yeah, he left for one of the jobs that you're lampooning in your show, yes.
And then tried to steal some of our cast away from us.
He did?
Yeah, which was perfect. I mean, I love it because it's just, we get a call from Matt saying, I just got a call from Bob Greenblatt.
I think this actually happened in your show.
Yeah.
Oh, maybe.
It could have.
Well, that's the thing that we made clear to everyone. We said, look, anything that happens is fair game for the show. So just be careful what you're saying.
Well, clearly Matt did not elect to do that.
No.
Maybe he felt that that would be a bad idea.
But we ran into Greenblatt at some award thing and I said, what are you doing? You're poaching our people.
That's our show.
He said, come on. No, come on. He tried to get Kathleen, too. He tried to get Kathleen for a show. That's not fair.
But the pilot, the first episode of your show, makes clear that fair is really not how it works in TV, right? Did you consider other places besides Showtime, or were they the...
No, we went to Showtime, and they seemed like they were going to... cough up the
they
money
wanted it
and they
it
wanted
great.
It. So, yeah.
And the other thing that's great about them is they have been creatively, absolutely hands-off, totally supportive, which is the other thing that was important to us, is that we weren't buried by a ton of notes and haven't been.
Right.
They never say, what are you going to do this season?
They just wait to see the scripts.
They wait to see the scripts, and then once in a while they'll say something, and I'll think, I don't give a shit what you think.
By the way, you should just know of the two of us, the characters are absolutely Sean and Beverly. That was Beverly talking.
Does one of you write Sean and the other one write Beverly?
No.
We both write both, but it is so rooted in who we are.
It's really us.
Yeah.
Coming up after a short break, Crane and Cleric share their frustrations with Showtime and tell us why they're not afraid to burn bridges. You're listening to The Business from KCRW.
This podcast is produced by KCRW, a nonprofit public radio station based in Santa Monica. KCRW is listener-supported. Help us continue to create and distribute our unique content. Go to kcrw.com/join to donate. And thanks.
This is The Business, and I'm Kim Masters. Our guests today are Jeffrey Klarik and David Crane, creators of the Showtime comedy Episodes, a satirical look at the television business from two men who have experienced the madness firsthand. Despite critical acclaim, Emmy nominations, and a renewal for a fifth season, the show has flown largely under the radar, produced on a shoestring budget and still awaiting that breakout moment. Having been liberated from the need to work again ever, thanks to their jobs respectively on Friends and Mad About You, Crane and Klarik don't hesitate to air their grievances about what Showtime could be doing for their series. Klarik has a list.
They could have given us a better time slot. They could run us more. They could spend a few more bucks.
Mm.
There are plenty of things they could do.
And you think it's because it wasn't David Niven's baby?
No.
Well, no, he'll say to us, I love you guys, you're my favorites. And I'm thinking, that's bullshit. If you love us, show us, you know.
Show me the love.
Yeah, show a little love, but no.
You could go over there with a boombox and stand outside the windows, I suppose.
Yes. We've had to actually say to them, you know, it would have been nice if somebody had called to congratulate us.
Oh, my God, you know? You're kidding. That's terrible.
No, and then a couple of days later, we'll get a call saying, hey, sorry, I've been away.
You guys have a certain freedom here, it's clear. I mean, you've pulled the brass ring in Hollywood. So does that mean that you get to do what you like and it's a beautiful thing?
It does for us, yeah.
Yeah, it is a beautiful thing. I mean, it's great to have that sort of freedom to do the work we want to do. You know, we're not in there pitching some crappy show that, well, we don't love it, but we know we can sell it.
Right, which is exactly what your show is about, that process.
Yeah. And also the good thing is, well, David always says, you have no fear of burning bridges. And I really don't anymore. It's like, what are they going to do to me?
I don't know. You have the FU money people dream of having, you know? So you're saying FU in a way.
Well, pretty much. I always say to David, yeah, I'll burn the bridge because I'm not going back over it again. I'm not going back to the other side of that bridge. So, yeah.
Also, you say on mic, who inspired the character of your evil studio executive? Well, he's not evil, but he's awful.
No, because also I think
it's all of them.
I mean, that's actually true. If you're talking about, are you talking about the character of Merck that John Pankow
plays?
Yes, The character really is a combination of many, many different people who we've met along the way. There was a lot of invention involved as well, taking all those pieces and then creating this.
But you
really
know the
BS,
the network BS. Sitting in the room. I mean, you really, if you want to know how the TV business works, you should just watch the first season alone. Is enough to give you a really good 101 understanding of the. I mean, it's almost. I don't know. Did you exaggerate? It's so depressing. The relentless
lying. No, we didn't
lying.
Exaggerate. I know. And when some of the critics would say, "Oh, come on, this couple isn't stupid. Why would they put up with it?" And I'm thinking, we put up with it for years.
We all put up with it.
That's what you do. If you want to do it, you have to play this stupid game.
And I think you're also always surprised, as much as you want to be cynical, you're always surprised at some, like, the next thing that happens.
Right.
You're like, really? I mean, we have enough, not just ourselves, but friends in the business and writers, and you just hear stories or you hear the notes they got on their script.
You think you've heard it all, and then you hear a story, and you're like, I can't believe that happened.
Yeah. And I think probably one of the most challenging things for us is to not have that be what the whole show's about.
Mm.
Because, you know, after a certain number of episodes, that would get kind of tired.
Yeah, you get
and
it.
So
mm-hmm.
What's really been fun is getting into the emotional relationships between Sean and Beverly and Matt and Carol, and that it's not just an inside show business show. It's also about the journey that their characters take.
Yeah. Matt is a very good sport about making fun of himself in this show. I mean, did he get it right away?
He did get it right away. In fact, sometimes he'll pitch an idea. And we'll say, no, you can't say that. You can't do that. That's terrible. I mean, and
we're protecting him.
You were actually protecting him.
He's so game that he'll just have ideas. We're like, well, we could do a thing. And we're like, no, you can't do that. We have to protect this guy a little bit. But he's great. And he has been such a sport. And he has never once balked at anything we've asked him to do for the character. And
that was going to be my question.
Funny,
my question was going to be, he'd never balk and say, oh, that's repugnant.
Not for the character, but in real life, I'll try to get him to take me to a gifting suite, just like Beverly did in the episode last season. And he dreads going to those things. He hates it. He hates the publicity. He doesn't want to be associated with these products. And I'll say, We got you an Emmy nomination. All I want is to go and get some free
Give
crap.
Give me some swag.
Yeah.
Let me just ask you briefly about the British casting. I mean, it was a British show. Did BBC say, we have these two wonderful actors for you?
Mm-mm. No, we sat in a room and we saw every British actor.
This is like 7 years ago. Like Benedict Cumberbatch was in.
No.
And this is before he was Benedict Cumberbatch.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, no.
And you said, no, he's not right for this.
No,
he wasn't.
And the guy from, you know.
From Homeland.
Damian Lewis?
Yes.
Yeah, he came in.
And
his wife came in.
Yeah, we really saw a lot of people for this. And Stephen and Tamsin, there was no question, they are Sean and Beverly.
I mean, one of the things we've talked about before is that leading men are so rarely American on TV.
You're talking about British actors playing Americans?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, Matt has a monologue from the season before last where he loses a part to a British actor playing American, and he just has a one-page railing monologue.
I am so sick of these British coming over here and stealing our parts. How is that even legal? Huh? It should be like, okay, you act in your country and we'll act in ours, but no. They sneak in here with their perfect American accents like some f***ing magic trick. You know, and no one even knows till it's too late. Then suddenly, you see them on a talk show and it's like, holy shit, that guy's English? They're on our TV shows. They're in our movies. There should be congressional hearings or something. F***ing British people. Stay the f*** home. No offense.
We did have fun dealing with, you know, British playing American. Because also, a lot of our actors who play supporting roles in our show,
they're all British.
Are British, playing American. Like Myra, who's the head of comedy for the network.
Oh, yeah.
And
I know it's a good character.
Because we're shooting over there, so we're constantly looking for British actors who can do American accents.
So one thing you do get from Showtime, you know, we had Alex Ganza on one of our podcasts, the spinoff recently, and he said he has these really tight schedules and he's writing as he goes and while they're shooting. And you guys, you do get, maybe because you're made for 10 cents, you get to do the whole thing in advance, right?
When we started, we really asserted, like, this is how we're going to do it. I mean, this is because we do everything ourselves, we write it ourselves, we want to be on set for every shot. And then we edit it afterward, which is why the show is off the air as for long as it is, because it takes us to do 9 episodes. It takes us a little under a year and a half.
And even if we wanted to hire other writers, we don't have money to hire other writers. But I don't want to hire other writers.
But you don't.
I mean, you don't have any other writers. That's very unusual.
No,
right?
Not just us.
Just you two. Do you fight?
Yeah.
No.
Fight? No.
No, but it's nonstop. I mean, it's morning, noon, and night. It's in the car. It's in bed. It's at a restaurant. I'll be in the bathroom and I'll hear knock, knock, knock. What if? I'll say, knock, can you give me 5 minutes? Just 5 minutes. Let's not talk about the show. And then there's dead silence.
Yeah, then we've had that thing. We're like, okay, tonight at dinner, let's not talk about the show.
Let's see if we can make it through one dinner.
And after a few minutes, it's like all right.
What about if she says,
let's talk about the show.
That sounds sort of fun.
I'm just afraid if we do stop, what'll we talk about? You remember when we used to have the show?
Yeah, what if that had happened?
What if that
Jeffrey Klarik and David Crane are the creators of episodes on Showtime. Thank you guys for coming in.
You're welcome. Thank you. A police car and a screaming siren.
And that's The Business. Caitlin Parker produced and edited today's program with production assistance from Ray Guarna. You can hear The Business on demand with the KCRW smartphone app and get the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you download podcasts. I'm Kim Masters. We'll see you next week on The Business.